Hello, welcome to NWR Connectivity. It's episode 388. I'm Neil Ronahan, back after going to the Mushroom Kingdom. Joining me today is John Reardon, who was here last week, not in the Mushroom Kingdom.
Howdy, everybody. I realized as you were saying that you mentioned before we started recording that you had not listened to last week's episode, and so you missed our entire setup for where you were and what you were doing.
What was I doing?
You were being tested in the desert by Satan.
I mean, honestly, yes, that's what I did. I went with my family to California. We went to Joshua Tree in the desert, and then went to Universal Studios Hollywood. Saw Super Nintendo World. We'll talk about that a little later. I was like off of Route 66 when you guys were starting to record.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you shared the Zencastr link, that was when I was trying to help a guy who got his car stuck in sand on the side of the road. I thought about joining the call just to be like, hey, what's up, guys?
That would have been nuts. I mean, it would have worked just live from the scene.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm calling, like, I was, I mean, something that I will remember as far as the Zelda movie announcement was, we pulled over on the side of Route 66 to see something that, honestly, I'm not even going to try to describe because I didn't see it. But my wife wanted to see something that was like off the side of the road. So we're driving on the sand. We didn't get stuck in it. I parked the car in front of train tracks as I was with one kid in the car. Then my wife went over with our older kid to go look at the thing on the other side of the train tracks. And I'm just sitting there on my phone. And then all of a sudden, I see that they announced a live action Zelda movie. So that is how I'm a train is going by me as I'm like, they're doing what with Avi Arad? Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
More $1 billion.
Yeah, it's going to be great, Neil. I have absolute confidence. We're going to talk about more of the Zelda movie toward the end of this podcast. Because you guys answered the call for listener mail about the Zelda movie. So good job.
We got two. Yeah. And I'll share any of my thoughts. Although I from the little bit that I listened to the YouTube segment that you posted, mm-hmm. I think I'm largely on the same page as all you guys in a collective way that like all parts of my opinion are represented across the three of you.
Yeah.
But as we're recording the day that we are recording, an Indie World happened. I assume probably maybe the last major Nintendo thing for the end of the year, like. Famous last words and everything, but we're midway through November. I guess there's a light chance of something in December, but
they could do like a late September direct, but it's probably late January, early February.
Yeah, but I would assume we're probably like just coasting until like maybe there's some. I mean, I think people are always like the Game Awards. Like since Reggie left, they haven't done anything, but like Nintendo might have a little something there. Like I'm trying to think like what game they could possibly show off there. Maybe it's Metroid Prime 4. I don't know.
There's just enough threat that I'll have to sit through the Game Awards. So yep. I got to remember to buy beer here in a couple weeks.
Hey, I don't even know when it is. Will I even be around? I have no idea.
It's the 7th.
The 7th. Oh, it's like a Thursday, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. At least there was one time where the Game Awards aligned with a Packer game that wound up being like they were down 20-0 at the half and came back and won on a last second Hail Mary. That was way better than the Game Awards that year.
That sounds better than nobody wins at the game. Like there's everybody's down and nobody comes back. Like there's no winning team at the Game Awards. Except for whoever rushes the stage and screams about Bill Clinton.
We should do a drinking game for the Game Awards.
Oh, that's what I do. It's anytime anybody rushes the stage, anytime that Jeff Keighley appears in a game, or twice if he gives an award to a game that he's in.
If Hideo Kojima appears
or is mentioned.
If Hideo Kojima appears in person, finish your drink.
Yep.
if he shows up in video, then you have to take a shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Indie World, the headliner, according to Nintendo, the headliner is really, really Core Keeper is one of the highlights. It looked fine.
It's not.
I'm just looking at like the press release. Like, I'm really surprised that Outer Wilds is not in the headline.
I thought Outer Wilds was at the top.
So here's the Nintendo press release.
Because I wrote the roundup in the order of the press release, so that's the only reason why I think
New Indie World Showcase uncorks the bottle on more than a dozen upcoming Nintendo Switch games. Highlights include Shantae Advance Rescue Revolution, Core Keeper, and On Your Tail.
Oh, but that's, and then below that they get to the actual list of games, and they leave with Shantae.
Wilds was ostensibly the closer, so
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Shantae Rescue Revolution, which is a half completed sequel to the first Shantae that was supposed to come out on Game Boy Advance.
Hopefully fully completed by the time it comes out on Switch.
Yeah. I think I am very confused about it. Completed and released after 20. I guess maybe they worked on it right after, because I think the first Shantae came out in like 2002.
Yeah.
But this is, yeah, they're expanding that original Game Boy Advance game. They're adding a 4-player battle mode coming out in 2024. I've had a realization over the years that I really only like the one Shantae game that isn't like the other Shantae games, that being Pirate's Curse on 3DS. So I'm happy for people who want this. And I like the idea of taking a game from 20 years ago and being like, we're going to finish it now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you find me a game that is like mostly done, but not quite, and put it on Kickstarter, I will back it. As I have done several times before, that is doesn't even matter if it's a good game. There was a Dune game that's not legally a Dune game now. That was on Kickstarter. That was like a aerial combat game. I backed the crap out of that, and I have a cartridge of it now, and it's okay, but I'm glad it exists.
The other big reveal, or I guess the big announcement, was that Outer Wilds Archaeologist Edition, which includes the DLC. I think you can also get it without the DLC.
Yes, you can.
So that's coming out on December 7th. That was announced like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, that was announced in 2021.
Yeah, from my understanding, this is like a borderline impossible port. And I think that the story is that like they announced it and we're like, oh crap, now we need to make this actually work. We'll see how it looks. It was very funny watching the indie world, because immediately you're like, oh, this is gonna be very low resolution.
It looked very plain compared to what I've seen of that game on other systems, but it looked playable. I don't know, I would almost rather have like a flat looking version of the game as opposed to like a super blurry version of the game. So we'll see. I'm interested. I'll play the worst version of it. That's fine.
And then probably my highlight, or at least my, two of the shadow drops was very interested in, Backpack Hero, which I actually put like a half an hour into. Mm-hmm. Backpack Hero reminds me a lot in vibes of Loop Hero, which came out 2 years ago. The concept here, it's got your favorite buzzwords, deck building roguelike.
Oh yeah.
But the way this works is that like you have a backpack that then you need to like take items and position them like it's a Resident Evil game for inventory. Mm-hmm. And then you use what you have there to go into turn-based combat, and you're exploring different dungeons. There's a town building element to it, of like rebuilding a broken town. It just seems like a nice little run based game. Very early on it, I think I'm in the middle of my third run right now. Just seems like something that I'll continue to screw around with and have a good time with. We'll see how much depth is there. It does look like there's potential for some incredible synergies though, because like you can have like your sword and then have a certain item by it, and that might like increase the attack on it. And you can do that where like they have like some cleavers where it's like, place this cleaver, if it's surrounded by other cleavers, and that'll be +1 damage, and you can just keep on stacking this stuff. We'll see how much like that lasts throughout the game. Very encouraged by it. I also downloaded the demo for Howl, which also came out today. That's another it got a really cool art style. I think it's got some like kind of tactical stuff about it too. curious to check that out. And then a Highland Song from Ankle. They're the people who did 80 Days and Overboard, which are two extremely good games available on Switch. Highly recommend them. A Highland Song looks fantastic, coming out on December 5th. I'll be working on a review for that, although I have not played it yet, but I expect to be starting it soon. How about you? Was there anything that you that stood out to you for the rest of this?
I will say Highland Song looks really cool. I was watching that and was like, I could play this. And then I clicked over and immediately saw you going dibs. And I was like, OK, fair enough. But no, I mean, honestly, like the stuff that once again, Outer Wilds, it was in the sizzle reel, but I think Gecko Gods looks cool. Planet of
that's
Lana.
One that I remember. I don't know if this is the first time it was confirmed for Switch, but I just remember seeing Gecko God stuff before, and
I
want to
say we've seen it before in like a
I feel like it was
in
like a Wholesome Things or something like that.
Yeah. Planet of Lana is another one that I've been meaning to play. It's on Game Pass, I believe, so I should probably play it there, but that looks cool. Urban Myth Dissolution Center just looks weird.
It's got a good name.
Yeah, it sure does. I'm not gonna play Braid. that lowered the overall value of this direct.
I did Fireshine Games. They're putting out that game Core Keeper that looks fine. I mining sandbox adventure with a bunch of multiplayer stuff, it's not really my bag. Fireshine Games, when I saw them pop up in this, I got very excited on the do you remember this was like the beginning of 2020, that very cool like steampunk Castlevania game.
What's it called?
Steam and Cinder or something. Yes. Along those lines.
Yes, yeah. I do. Yeah,
like that was a demo I played at the last PAX East I went to before the pandemic was hitting us. And like that demo blew me away. And I've been like patiently waiting for any news on that game, and it basically dropped off the face of the earth for like a year and a half. But now it's I think Fireshine Games is supposedly publishing it. I'd reached out to them early in the year and they're like, more news soon. Still waiting, guys.
Yeah.
Someday. And at this point I'm like, it's just Gestalt even gonna be even good, any good. Maybe it won't be. It's been a very long time.
Well, here's hoping.
Yep. Yeah, that's the indie world. I think it was a pretty solid spread. I
good
was like
variety.
Seeing the variety in these. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not there are some of these where there's like way too many deck building roguelites or way too many farming sims. This had a nice variety of stuff. Very well paced, not too long, good number of games. I liked it. Feel like I can look at this list and remember everything, which is always good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one that, I mean, maybe might not stand out over time, but definitely interesting. So yeah, I guess now let's talk about Super Nintendo World.
Yes, you went on an adventure.
It's very cool. It is like, I don't really know how to put it into words other than like it was worth going to. This is my first time ever going to Universal Studios Hollywood. So that was cool as well. Like the studio tour there is very cool. They still have a Water World stunt show, which
yeah, they
is
do.
Awesome because it's I assume it's probably like peak right now because like I was in Hollywood when the actor strike ended. So you're welcome. But I think like all the stunt performers are just people from Hollywood. And it's
right.
Probably people that haven't been able to do their jobs for a while.
Oh, so was that whole thing? Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was at the end of the show, like the main guy like was just like, oh, like you might have seen these people. Like what? It was like this guy was a stunt performer in Picard. This guy was a stunt performer in Wakanda Forever. And it was so rad. If you ever go to Universal Studios Hollywood, like studio tour, just because of the fact that you're actually going, I've only ever been to Universal Studios Orlando where they're like, welcome to the studio tour. And this is what would look like a set. Whereas in Hollywood, you're actually going to sets. Like you pass by, like this is what the clock tower was from Back to the Future. But the Water World show. Awesome. A lot of other cool rides there. The paint job that they gave to the Jurassic Park ride to make Jurassic World, very good. It's
what do they change to make it?
Well, I mean, it's got modern.
Do they just
tech.
Write "World" in Sharpie?
I mean, I was talking to like one of the people there in line. I asked, I was like, so like I've been on the one in Orlando, the Jurassic Park. Like, is this any different? And he's like the track is the same, but we change everything. Like, it's the Indominus Rex escapes and stuff.
Oh,
like
sure.
That. You see a Mosasaurus. Like just some of the technology that they have is improved. But they use the same boats. So they gave it a paint job. And he's like, if you look at some of the boats, like the paint chips, and you can see the old Jurassic Park colors. But then like the Super Nintendo World stuff, it is, I mean, this is the smallest form that I think there's probably going to be of Super Nintendo World. Cause for people who don't know, when this came out in Japan, you had the Mario Kart ride, all the fun stuff inside. And then there was like a Yoshi Omni Mover ride going mm-hmm. around the outside. The Hollywood version, the Mario Kart is the only ride there.
Yeah.
And then when this comes to Orlando in TBD 2025, there's going to be like a Donkey Kong roller coaster. And like potentially more stuff. Like a lot of that is just coming out from like patents and people taking pictures of construction and stuff.
Sure.
It's going to be like a minecart roller coaster. And I think the big hook with that is that like there's a hidden track. So it basically can like mime you doing those jumps in Donkey Kong minecart.
Oh, sure. That's cool.
But so Super Nintendo World, for anybody that might be going to Universal Studios Hollywood, get the Super Nintendo World early access. I waited on a bunch of lines to get there, but I was able to basically, I was on the Mario Kart ride without breaking stride, got on the Mario Kart ride, cool. Was able to do most of the things in the park in the hour before it opened to the public. And then it got way more crowded. It was still pretty crowded in the early access period, but you could get stuff done. The Mario Kart ride that's the thing that I feel like people have probably heard the most of. Like, it's awesome. Also, as somebody who was a little bit nervous as far as the size restraints, really all of the Universal rides, I kind of was like a little terrified. Like, I'm not like, you know, I'm 6'2". That 40 inch requirement, I'm not there, but I'm close enough that I'm like, oh, is this going to be tight? And I have run into an issue where like, just because of my height, some roller coasters I can't fit on. So I got nervous, but like, I think it's a little bit of an overblown issue. People obviously won't fit, but I don't think it's as restrictive as advertised. I think that 40 inch is more of a, depending on your body type,
sure,
you might be, and they're kind of covering their bases by making it a lower number.
I sometimes forget that I'm very short. I'm like 5 feet tall, and sometimes I forget that you are like very, very tall.
A foot taller than you.
Neil's like, he's taller than me, but like, so is everybody. And then I'm like, oh no, Neil's like actually kind of tall.
I was like, so the Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey ride, like that was, as I was doing my reading about it, that was like, if you could fit on that, you could fit on everything. And it was a lot of like horror stories. People like, oh, I couldn't do it. It was so embarrassing. And I like went to the seat for that to test it out. And it was just like, no worry at all. Like I was like, really? Like I've been on other rides before in my life that have been like, oh, like this is a little tight. Like this one, I was like, this is actually kind of comfortable. Like I could take a nap here. But so the Mario Kart ride, I'll admit that I rode better rides at Universal.
Sure.
So you get the visor thing that looks like a Mario hat. Mm-hmm. And you get that on before, like almost like if you were getting 3D glasses for a ride, you get handed that. And then you go into your cart. It's two people per cart. I did it with my 5-year-old. And then in the cart, there's like an AR screen that like magnetically attaches to the visor that you have on. And then when everything goes, then you use that and you can see like the Koopalings and Bowser and other people that you're racing with as you go through the level. It goes through a lot of different, like there was a Luigi's Mansion section. Of course, it closes with Rainbow Road, lava areas, like you go up at the sky. Like there's, goes through a lot of the Mario Kart hits as you go through this race. And then you have like you have moments where you have like you'll have an arrow and you have to turn left or turn right. And then you have buttons that like can you do get items and you use that and you can fire green shells. And there is a competitive element to it, but it's basically your cart and like the cart next to you. You're fighting against Team Bowser, and if you don't do well enough, then you lose. So I, when I did it, I, you know, I won. Then when my wife did it with my son, Team Bowser won. And then you do get like points and stuff. But what I think I notice is that so like you have the power band. I don't think you necessarily need to tap anything. It's just by the proximity of you being in the car.
Yeah,
it'll register with it. And there's a lot of things that I noticed where like I assumed that it would be like, oh no, I need to put the watch face of this power band thing to get credit for it. But there's elements of it that it's kind of like, oh yeah, like you walked by this thing and you get credit for this.
Yeah.
But the ride, like my issue is I think the AR screen like could stand to maybe be a little bigger, because I definitely felt like my periphery view was a little cut off.
Sure.
It was still a super cool ride. If it didn't have a stupid long wait, I would have done it a few more times. I aspire to you know ride it again in the future. But it's super cool.
They kind of have the Star Wars problem at Disney World of that, like there's really only one or two things to do there. So
yeah,
everybody in the park is there for the same one or two things.
Yep. Like and it's hilarious. So I went 2 days. The Thursday we got the early access to Super Nintendo World. In retrospect, I wish I bought the early access for both days.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, it kind of worked out because Universal Studios Hollywood is split into the upper lot and the lower lot. Mm-hmm. The upper lot is like the original part of the park. Like that's the Studio Tour, Waterworld. A lot of other rides are up there. The lower lot is essentially like you go down four escalators and it's just like a plaza that has the Return of the Mummy roller coaster, Jurassic World, and a Transformers ride. Transformers ride rips. It's very good. Like for as much as I don't care about Transformers that much, it was a very good ride. I'll give it credit. And also they have Transformers like in the park as like characters.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's dudes on stilts, but in general blown away by how Universal does some of the characters. Not the Simpsons. The Simpsons just look like you bought these at Party City.
A dude in a, yeah.
Yeah. But like the dinosaurs, I think you follow me on Instagram, but I shared some videos of like my kids interacting with the dinosaurs, which like it is clearly like a dude in on stilts or something. But like, you know, like they play into it. And there was a dude who was like, because you could do photo ops with Blue, the Velociraptor, you know, Chris Pratt's friend. But there was a period there where my 2-year-old was just like on the side, just like gawking at this dinosaur. And I'm listening to these kids ask like the handler questions. And some of the kids are clearly like wise to this being fake. One of them asked, so like, it's a like, dude, like the way it was set up is that, so like the, whatchamacallit, like kind of standing on like the front part of the feet with the back raised up, but because it's a human in there, they have like metal like shoes that are touching the ground, so that way the person doesn't have to, you know, stay balanced.
Right.
Somebody's like, why are there metal things on the bottom of his feet? Without breaking a beat, I assume this is a question that's asked a lot. The dude's just like, oh, they're like horseshoes for dinosaurs. just like super, super cool. And the Transformers were guys on stilts, but they're all like they have like voice commands, and they had Bumblebee comes out, and because Bumblebee's hook in the Michael Bay Transformers is that he lost his voice box and he just like plays songs and radio clips. But the way that they like executed like the Bumblebee actor acting and also like having music clips go along to whatever he was doing in the photo op was honestly incredible.
Yeah.
And then the Mario characters, Mario, Luigi, and Peach all talk and their voices move and their eyes move, and it's haunting. but once again, it's still like, I was like, my wife and I were trying to pick out like, how are they doing this? because it can't be the person in the suit triggering these. But there has to be
that Mario representative job for Charles Martinet. That's the job. He's in that suit the whole time.
Because it was so we got Mario and Luigi hats there. And when we got a picture with Peach, and as we're walking over to Peach, she's like, "Oh, hi, bros." And I'm like it's like it's so quick. Like just very impressed by some of the flares there. But back to the Mario Kart ride. Super cool, and it is very, very busy. I probably should have taken advantage of the Thursday was a lot lighter. I think the highest wait time that there was, or at least like there might have been a couple of like peaks, but it's like probably 40-50 minutes. Probably should have just bit the bullet and did that again that day, because the next day it was basically like it hit as high as 3 hours. And it does have a very cool queue. It does. I was kind of surprised it like starts in like a Yoshi's Island themed area. And then goes into like Bowser's Castle, which that stuff I expected, because you see Bowser's Castle is where that ride is.
Are you sure you didn't just think it was Yoshi's Island because there were like babies crying everywhere?
Maybe.
I don't know. Just like the universal
no strollers in that. But so
keep the kid on your back.
One, so the power band, if you go, it is mandatory. I haven't used them as amiibo yet, but now I have, wristband amiibo, I guess. But it connects to the app, and there's like 120 something achievements that you can get.
Jeez.
And I didn't want to completely Berube this and just like try to, 100% everything. But like they have stuff for like doing specific things inside the Mario Kart ride. So like, that's kind of cool, and I really hope it's persistent, at least to a degree of like if I go to Universal Studios Orlando when that opens, I hope that my progress that I've made continues there.
Can you tie it to your My Nintendo account and earn coins?
I don't think so. That would be cool though. But it does, I mean, like you're punching blocks with it and you collect coins that way. You also like randomly like will get like a fire flower or a power up. And like that's counted in the app. There's hidden 8-bit characters that you can find in different parts of the world. One of the things that like I feel like I never heard about was there's like a quote unquote secret area, which is just like off to the side. You go up steps. but up there, like if you hit all the blocks up there, you'll get like a secret achievement and also get a key. The keys are used to fight Bowser Jr. The way it's kind of presented, at least was presented to me, is that I thought they have like the four mini games. There's a Goomba one where you turn a crank. There's a Koopa Troopa one that like you have to time hitting a POW block to then hit a shell up a pipe. There's a Thwomp one where you have to like how there's like the different colored panels. I feel like there was a lot of like Mario Galaxy stars like that. Like you basically need to hit them all to be one color. It's a couple people. You're like frantically running around a touchscreen. And probably my favorite of those was like the Don't Wake Daddy piranha plant thing. That's just like whack-a-mole where you're just trying to hit clocks to make the piranha plant not be pissed off.
They should do that, but with the evil piano from Mario 64. Just fucking eats the children if it wakes up.
Oh no. But yeah, so you get keys from there. You need to get three keys. And I was kind of under the assumption that like you had to do those three of those four things in order to beat Bowser Jr. But you can apparently get keys many other ways. Like I believe you get one by finding all four of the 8-bit characters. There's Mario, Luigi, Peach, and Bowser. But you also get one by going up to the secret area and just hitting all the blocks up there. Also in that secret area is one of those viewfinder things. I think like Mario 3D World, 3D Land had them.
Yeah.
And so that, like, you look in that, and this is also another example of how the power band, like, I did not realize this, but like, you're holding your power band and you are, holding this viewfinder and it's tracking what you're doing. And apparently, randomly at different times of the day, there will be like little, like, flares that show up because there's an augmented reality to that too. As you're using the viewfinder, you're looking at the park itself. But it'll also have like a flying question mark block or like a paratroopa that is not real. But you can zoom in at a certain point and go to Rosalina's observatory.
Oh,
like that is a secret thing. There's also like a secret Pikmin thing. If you will like highlight over the Pikmin at a certain time, I think it like cycles through it. Also did find two sightings of Pikmin in the park. That was fun, especially because it was kind of like an I Spy game that I played with my kids.
Yeah. Are the Pikmin really, I mean, the Pikmin are really the only other franchise that shows up there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There were at least two. There might have been more, but those were the two that I found. You know, kept an eye out there because we did the Mario Kart ride and then we did the, you know, we got the keys to do the Bowser Jr. fight. The Bowser Jr. fight is like up to 12 people can do it, and it feels like a janky Wii game. Like honestly, I felt like I was playing WarioWare because it's there's a camera that like captures like you and like has your silhouette up on the screen. You have to duck to dodge billet bills, you have to swat your hands to swat away the bombs, you do a jump up, and then your character like comically jumps up a lot higher to hit question mark blocks.
Yeah.
But what I did notice with this too is because when I did, I'm doing it with my wife, a 5-year-old who gets it, and a 2-year-old who during the second time we did the Bowser Jr. fight just came over and hung out with me. So mm-hmm. I had to do it while holding a 2-year-old. But like not to knock on my child, but like he's not carrying his weight fighting Bowser Jr. here. But I did notice that like he wasn't doing that well, and they just kept on giving him invincibility stars.
Yeah.
Clearly there is some thought into like that we want to make this a challenge, but also like these are children,
right?
But you can totally wait in line and then not get a key, which just sucks.
Yeah.
I will also give credit to the people who work there because the hitting the POW blocks with the right timing, like the dude running it was like, you have to hit it, but I'm gonna tell you when to hit it, because if I hit it, I'll get in trouble. But like it was very like the timing was off, it was very mm-hmm. janky, but that dude was very patient and it was appreciated.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that, it was awesome. The Bowser Jr. fight is also kind of a ride in itself. I thought that was really cool. Trying to think of anything else. The Toadstool Cafe. If you are going there, you need to like scan a QR code and pray to God to make sure you get a time there. But the funny thing is, once again, it's just it's a time so that way you could wait on a line to wait on a line. Like it's
right.
Theme parks.
Right.
The Toadstool Cafe was very cool. The food was fine. It's totally overpriced. I did get
quick service theme park food. It's
yeah
high quality.
It was fine. But we did get the tomato soup, so that way we got the collector's toad cup. We also did splurge and got the ridiculous looking, I think in that Nintendo Direct from 2 years ago, I think Miyamoto had like the popcorn Starman container.
Mm-hmm.
We got that. Where you could theoretically get popcorn refills for a mouth a day, but the lines were so bad, we only got like two.
Right.
But now we have this like comically large superstar. We also did get the mushroom sippy cup thing, which once again did not get as many refills as we probably could have gotten.
Yeah.
Although that was one where.
How much do you think you spent on merch?
Too much.
Okay.
We also did get and they also like how there's mouse ears, there's like Yoshi ears and also Boo ears, which those are what I got because they're just, it's adorable because there's like mouse ears, how you have like, you know, two of them on the headband, but one of them is like a shy Boo, the other one's a happy Boo. Like,
yeah. What's on the, is the Yoshi one like Yoshi's eyes?
No, it's just like, I think there's just a couple Yoshis on the
headband. Oh, okay. I was like, I'm confident Yoshis don't have ears, so I'm trying to figure out what body part
there's also on top of your head. Like a Goomba hat that I was really tempted by. I was trying to get my oldest kid wanted to get the Mario hat, so we got that. We were trying to convince my youngest kid to get the Bowser head thing, but he loved wearing it. You saw that picture.
I did. It was, but then, a great
like
picture.
After that, he was like, "No, I'm done." We wound up getting a Luigi hat for him. So now we have a Mario Luigi hat. That the hat, they're really good hats. the best. My kid was like Mario 2 years in a row for Halloween.
Yeah.
I know Mario hats. These are very good Mario hats.
I have a collection of cheap Halloween Mario hats.
Yeah,
we all do.
Got a crocheted one for when he was a baby, because that was once I had a kid, I was like, the first year I would like to be I would like him to be baby Mario and I will be Yoshi.
Yeah.
Executed that. Trying to think of anything else related to Nintendo World. It's a cool place to hang out. It's like surreal seeing this come to reality. Like I was talking to my kid as we were walking in and he was super excited. And I was just like, Ed, you know how old daddy is? And he's like 35. And I'm like, yeah, like that's how long I've been waiting for this pretty much. I remember having a similar feeling going to Universal Studios Islands of Adventure with the Spider-Man ride there. Cause it's also like, as I'm now planning my 2025 trip to go to Super Nintendo World when it opens in Florida. I haven't been to Universal Studios. I went to Hollywood last week. Before then, I haven't been to Universal Studios Orlando in like 15 years. I think the last time I was there, the Simpsons ride was brand new. But I remember going to Islands of Adventure when it first opened, like probably like a year or two after. And like that Marvel Comics ass Marvel area, like just dripping with 90s Marvel Comics stuff, which is like that was my jam as a kid.
Yeah.
That Spider-Man ride was the closest that I've ever felt to how I feel with Super Nintendo World.
Yeah.
And I probably whenever I get to the Star Wars, like the new Star Wars area, like, I mean, Star Tours is cool and all. I'll probably have a similar feeling. But like, you know, Disney stuff is cool and everything. But, you know, outside of the ubiquity of, you know, a Buzz Lightyear or a Pirates of the Caribbean, like those are classic. But like Nintendo's my thing. Like, what are we doing here?
Yep. Yeah. No, I definitely got that going into the Star Wars area at Disney, but I 100% get it. I'm excited for when that does open in Orlando, because I wouldn't mind going to the California. I don't think I've ever been to Universal in California. As far as I know, I don't think so.
It is weird because like I left it and I was like, well, I'm probably never coming back here.
Sure.
It is like if you've never been to Universal Studios Hollywood, I think it's worth at least one trip. Do not go on holidays or weekends.
Right. Right. I mean, that good theme park advice in general. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it is a teeny tiny park.
Yeah.
But yeah, like and I think I mentioned it before, the rush to the lower lot to go to the Nintendo World. When we went the second day, we got there a little bit after it opened to the wide public. And just did a bunch of upper lot stuff with no lines because everybody was at the other end of the park.
Well, that is what I did with once I had done the Star Wars stuff at Disney. Yeah, then you go to the rest of the rest of that park and it's empty.
Like the Secret Life of Pets ride, just a cute dark ride. We did that back to back with no wait.
Yeah.
And then later in the day, it had like an hour long wait.
Yeah. Well, that's the great thing. So like obviously like Disney still has Star Tours, like their original Star Wars ride.
Yeah.
But that's not in the Star Wars area. And so the great thing is everybody goes to the Star Wars area. Star Tours, still the best Star Wars ride. You can literally just walk in circles doing that and nobody's waiting in line for it.
Star Tours. And then that was the last time I went to Disney. I think I only was able to go for like half a day or something. I forget exactly. Yeah. Like, because my sister lived down there for a while and there was like we went on a cruise for my grandma's 90th birthday and like we're leaving out of Orlando or something, so like we went to Disney for a day, but it was with a lot of extended family. But I do remember I basically went on, did the new Star Tours, it was like that ripped, and then we had to leave.
Yep. Well, that's a great, they constantly update it.
Yeah,
so it's like always different. And even if you go multiple times, it's like a bunch of, there's like 3 points throughout the ride where it can change what video it plays, and so like you got to catch them all, so you just ride it over and over again.
Yep. Yeah. I'll go back to Disney at some point too. I need to hit up that Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
I did. It was also funny with the lines. The Harry Potter stuff was another thing where it was like hour long lines, and like neither of my kids are big enough to do that. So my wife and I just did single rider back to back, where we basically did not break stride walking through the castle, did the ride and came back. Like we were like done it in a half an hour together. Yeah. Spent more time walking there.
That's a cool. Yeah, Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling sucks, saying that out loud on the podcast as we talk about Harry Potter. That the queue for the like castle ride, because when I went, it was very busy. I will also say, I believe I went before we knew that J.K. Rowling sucks, so I don't even feel bad about it.
I felt bad about it. The only money I spent in that area was got a butterbeer, and butterbeer is overrated.
If it makes you feel better, she gets a portion of every park admission you pay to go to the Nintendo World.
No.
So you sure did give her money, and so did everybody else going to see the Nintendo stuff. You're giving her money no matter what.
Yeah.
There's no way to avoid it. She's rich, and we can't stop her.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Yep. Sweet embrace of death is all we can hope for.
Yeah. It's a cool ride.
Very, very neat technology. Like that was I basically just like was like, all right, I'm done with this wizard bullshit, but like I'm here. I've heard it's a cool ride. And it was a cool ride.
Yeah. It did break down many times when I was on it. Cause I went like when it was pretty much brand new.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was constantly breaking. So you'd like be going and like dementors would be flying at you and they'd just like stop. Oh,
that'd be terrifying.
And you just
that'd be terrifying.
You is literally where it broke down for us. And there's like a dementor like hanging there. And we're like,
yeah,
okay.
There are parts of that ride where you're like borderline upside down. Like that would be hell.
Yeah. No, it's fun. It's kind of one of those, like, it's got like those almost like hanging roller coaster seats kind of setup, which I always find extremely comfortable.
Yep.
So like, honestly, like that would break down and I'd be like, I could take a nap here.
Yeah.
This is nice.
Yeah, just leaning back.
Yeah. It's air conditioned.
My feet are dangling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably all I got to say about Universal Studios. If anybody has any questions about Super Nintendo World, you know, send them into connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. I'm working on a feature because as I did my research for this, like there's definitely a lot of like SEO bait stuff and stuff coming from a theme park side. But like, you know, coming from a Nintendo side, I think there's probably some coverage of it out there. But I'm going to try to, you know, add my piece to the world.
Sure.
And send in some questions and maybe I'll use that. You know, I can answer them here. Put them into the article that I eventually put. It's underway. It's very long. But for better or worse, related to the Wizard Cop, John, I think you've been playing a video game that no one else at the site will play.
Yeah, I said many times on the podcast, I have no issue playing games made by people I think suck. So I'm handling all of our Hogwarts Legacy coverage, and I will say that to the credit of the staff of NWR, there are several of them that would rather we just didn't cover this game, but to be blunt, we have bills to pay. And people will watch stuff.
The video is popping off. Some of that money will definitely get donated to a I guess anti-JK Rowling charity.
Is that it's like not a charity to support trans children, specifically an anti-JK Rowling charity.
We're
not
probably,
sure what they do, but
I need to do a little digging into what charity. I'll probably figure it out at the end of the year. I'll try some amount of transparency to tell people where the money's going, but I want to be like, oh, this video tanks, like we're gonna keep our $150, but like if it does well, then we'll give some of the money away.
It is one of those things where I kind of figured at the beginning of the year, like, yeah, we have to cover this because I think there's demand for it. And I do believe, like, listen, once again, J.K. Rowling sucks. Watched my wife play through that game when it came out on Series X at the beginning of the year, and now I'm playing through it on Switch. It's a good game. The people who made it did a great job. And there are a lot of great little fuck yous to J.K. Rowling in that game. Which is fun.
It's the kind of thing where I I'm not going to play that game, but I don't really like, if you want to play it, whatever, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I'm never going to go after you.
You do. Like,
I like Earthworm Jim. I'm kind of settled on like,
You're a Duncan Apple fan. So.
Yeah. Like, I'm deep in hell already. So like, yeah, play yeah. whatever you want. But the Switch port, it's one of those weird things where I don't think I could like it's not like Witcher 3 where I feel like, oh, it's lower resolution, but you really are just like getting everything uncompromised. This is definitely compromised, but it's compromised in like interesting ways. And some of this, they started apparently with like the PS4 and Xbox One version where like essentially what they've done is they've taken the entire map and made the castle a loading zone and the overworld, like the rest of the map, a loading zone. So unlike in the original like Series X PS5 version where you could just walk in and out of the castle seamlessly, now that's a loading screen with two different zones. The cool thing is that there's a bunch of spots in the castle where like you'd walk over a bridge or something and you'd see out into the world, and they've essentially gone in and replaced all of those assets with like kind of like enclosed passages that are like fully custom. Like it's not like they just built walls around the bridges. Like they built new assets for all of these hallways.
Oh wow.
To like make it feel natural. Like it doesn't feel like, oh, this is an area where they're not letting me see something. It just feels like they just rebuilt sections of the castle to make it run on less powerful hardware. With assets that are completely unique from what's in the original version of the game, which is like, that's like some old school porting the game to the N64 kind of stuff where it's like, we're just gonna have to rebuild this part from scratch because it won't work on this system. That I always think is awesome. Loading times are a little rough, but like overall the game tends to run pretty well. Combat with a bunch of enemies if you're out in the overworld sucks. Avoid it if at all possible. But at the same time, like it's one of these games where, I mean, honestly, it would be like porting Spider-Man 2 to the Switch. Like, it is a game that's so specifically and obviously targeted to Series X and PS5 that, like, the fact that they had it running on PS4 and Xbox One was already impressive. And the fact that it's, like, arguably running at all on Switch is just ridiculous. This is definitely one of those games where, like, a producer came in and said, we need this on Switch. And all of the programmers were like damn it. We can't, what? Like, that was not the target spec for this game. So it's a super impressive port. Everybody who worked on it deserves like tons of praise for getting it to happen. Because I do think it's like a totally playable version of the game. Not ideal, but totally playable. And is honestly much, I expected this to kind of be a dumpster fire. So I'm very impressed with the port. Especially since this is a game that I was interested in but have not played because I was waiting. I was like, well, I'm only going to play through it once. I might as well wait for the Switch version. But it's a very good port for what it is. You just have to go in understanding what it is you are playing. But yeah, good game. J.K. Rowling sucks.
Yep.
Good game.
Yeah, so I guess we'll go to listener mail. Talking about the Zelda movie.
Yeah, do you want me to read these since I know the context of what they're talking about?
Sure.
So yeah, the first one we've got is from Vincent. Vincent says, howdy, howdy, howdy. I'm disappointed the new Zelda movie is not animated. I think the Puss in Boots 2 crew could have done something really cool with it. Nice, good action that pleases kids and adults alike. Plus, DreamWorks has a relationship with Universal, which Nintendo has. My concerns, if you're doing something live action, it's going to cost a lot of money to get to something that looks like Lord of the Rings with beautiful sets and lush vistas. That's like 200 to 3 million, probably more than that. says Alex is also right that early MCU movies are very unambitious. Iron Man 1 is him making the suit and then dragging Jeff Bridges into the sky. But your counterpoint that the new Dungeons and Dragons might be a good way to go is a good thought. That was 150 million, which got me thinking that D&D worked so well because they grafted a heist film onto D&D. So what if Zelda was a heist film where Link and his crew had to steal weapons and the Triforce? Also, you suggested with Avi Arad this was going to be like an early 2000s action movie. What's the over-under on it being better than the first Tomb Raider movie? Thanks and keep up the good work, Vince. I will say, I love the first two Tomb Raider movies.
That first Tomb Raider movie's solid.
Oh, those are great. Like, they're cheesy, but like, that's like we talked about last week. I made the comment to Alex and Matt that like, if this is like an early 2000s fantasy film, that is, I was 10. So that is my sweet spot.
As long as it's not the early 2000s Dungeons and Dragons movie that is horrific.
Honestly, I'd watch that too. Because that movie is good, bad.
I was going to say, like, yeah, like a Super Mario Brothers 90s movie level of bad might be fun.
Yeah.
First, I do want to comment that Puss in Boots 2 rocks. And I do, that is something that, like, I think you could take that art style and attach it to that art style animation and attach it to something along the lines of a Zelda. Even do an animated Metroid movie in that style, maybe? I don't know.
I guess I should ask, like, because you weren't on last week. For me, I heard, like, the live action stuff, and I was like, cool, yeah, Zelda live action makes sense to me. Are you a this should be animated kind of guy, or are you, where do you land on that?
It depends on what they want to do with it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think by the fact that it's live action, like, I think the problem with animated is that it's going to draw too many comparisons to the source material. And I think that's already an issue with live action, but I think this can differentiate it a little bit. Because it's different than Mario in the fact that, like, the Super Mario Brothers movie was a Mario thing with a story. Mario, outside of the RPGs, which are usually like their own brand of weird, like Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Galaxy technically has a story, but like it's in the background. A lot of them, it's like very threadbare. So there was a lot more you could do with Zelda games. You could say some of the stories aren't that good. Hey, what's up, Tears of the Kingdom? but stories are a big part of it. The narrative is a big focus. And I think if you do something that is similar to what the games look like, then the direct comparisons are going to be a lot.
Yeah.
I listen to a little bit of the YouTube clip that you guys put together. And like, I'm kind of just in the middle of all of you because I kind of just like, it's more like, okay, they decided to do live action. Let's see what they do. Like, I don't really have high expectations for this movie. I will see it. It's kind of like how I feel about the Super Mario Brothers movie, where when that got announced, I was like, I will be there day one. I think it was when it was announced, I believe I had a kid. I forget when they announced it for the first time. But I was like, I will see that with my child. It'll be great. Like, even in, I kind of have settled on the fact that the Super Mario Brothers movie, like, I can make fun of the faults of that movie, but it was a very memorable experience seeing that in theaters with my kid. And for that, I have nothing but fond, warm, fuzzy feelings about that movie. Even if I were to put on my critic hat, like, it's okay.
Sure. Yeah. It's pretty flawed as a movie.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like, also I don't care.
Yeah. And that's kind of, and like, I think the comparison to that Dungeons and Dragons movie, which is, I mean, I think that one, you had a lot of good talent making it. The kid from Freaks and Geeks and his writer director partner. Game Night, the previous movie from those guys, incredible. Like, very high concept comedy that was very, very good. And like them kind of taking that heist film a little bit like more comedic to Dungeons and Dragons, like, worked very, very well.
Yeah.
And I mean, that might be a model to go after. Maybe not exactly a heist film, although I'd totally be down for like Zelda being like, we need to steal the Triforce from Ganondorf. But like, it's more taking the tone of that Dungeons and Dragons movie, which I think did a very good job of treating the source material seriously while also poking fun at it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And I think we were talking, because I assume this was probably past where you had listened to the Dungeons and Dragons movie came up because we were talking about like the idea that for Zelda, it's less about them retelling a specific story from one of the games and more about like that universe just has a dense amount of lore
Yeah.
And like Dungeons and Dragons the same way. We're like, yes, you could. There are stories that have happened within the lore of Dungeons and Dragons that you could do, or you can take the mythos of that world and make something new within it.
Yeah.
And that feels like what Zelda could do.
I think about the Bridgerton guy in the Dungeons and Dragons movie, who I love that character because it was kind of just like the OP NPC that the DM brings in.
Yep.
Like there is a beautiful meta-ness to character.
That there's a whole movie
perfectly.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's just like the clearest example of like they just brought an overpowered NPC.
Yeah.
Like the DM was like, oh, they need some help with this. They're not going to make it out. We need to bring this dude in.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of, and like they did it in a way where like they didn't like look at this NPC. Like,
yeah.
He was just a character in the story.
Yeah.
And I think that is if you're going for some kind of lampooning some elements of the Zelda tropes in games, like that's the way you should handle it. I don't know if this Wes Ball director, you know, like sure, like I was very charmed by his like 2010 tweet that was like, hey, after Avatar they should make a Zelda movie like this.
Yeah.
I'm never gonna be able to get to do it, but this is what they should do next.
Yeah.
That does also like make me think that maybe this is a movie that isn't necessarily a straight live action movie.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, we've gotten to a point with like visual effects and stuff. I mean, you look at like Disney stuff, like the volume and all that. Star Trek is starting using stuff like that too now. Where I think doing like big, like CG environment laden films has become a lot easier, and also with that sort of technology, cheaper and honestly very convincing most of the time.
Yeah. It's only, yeah, I mean, like if you think about how the volume has been used at Star Wars shows, is that it's when they try to stretch the limitations is when it looks bad.
Right. It's when you try to pretend that it's a large forest that you have plenty of room to run through. And then you have people kind of like mime running to not waste room.
Or
it becomes a problem.
Or like Darth Vader's chasing Obi-Wan through these streets and he's like 2 feet away from you, man.
Yeah.
Like, how are you not just attacking him?
Yeah. But when it's, you know, people having a conversation, interior of houses, things like that, it's great.
Yep. But I mean, I it is the kind of thing, like I get excited about the prospect of it, even if I kind of expect the worst.
Yes.
Which means I'll be pleasantly surprised. Like, and if it's as bad as I think it might be, I'll probably still have a good time because it'll be really dumb.
Yeah. No, I mean I said last week I think that I'll buy whatever the biggest special edition is when this comes out physically. Like it doesn't matter how bad this movie is. I will watch a Zelda movie. Maybe they'll finally explain what the Zonai are.
I hope the people who made the narrative to Tears of the Kingdom aren't at the helm of this. And unfortunately, they probably are. So,
well, the dumb thing is, they were also at the helm of Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah.
I don't think they're convinced that they can tell a complex narrative non-linearly, or that they can have a linear story in a non-linear game. Like, I think everybody needs to go play Witcher. Just stop making Zeldas until you've all played through Witcher 3. And seeing how you can totally tell a very cinematic linear story in a non-linear game. It's fine. You just put objective markers where the next story part is. That's all you have to do. And then it happens in order. It's very easy. Let's see. Go on to the other email here. Cheer8Goblin says, hey, Connectivity. Everyone is thinking of casting American or British actors and actresses for the roles of Link and Company in a Lord of the Rings style environment. However, what about Celtic? I think people of Celtic culture would work, such as Welsh, Irish, or Scottish Gaelic. I just learned that Epona the horse is named after Epona, the goddess of horses and fertility in ancient Celtic religion, specifically Gaul. Celtic may fit the environment of a Zelda movie. What do you think? I 100% agree. Especially
also,
like the early Zelda games like have huge Celtic influences.
Yep.
So yeah, absolutely.
I also do find it funny that everybody's like, Link's gonna talk. Are you sure about that?
I mean, I would assume he is. I would. Okay, here's what you do. Link talks, but he has a very heavy Scottish accent. And we can't understand what he's saying.
It's like that. What was it? The movie Brave. The Guy Ritchie movie Snatch.
Oh, we're thinking of different movies. But yes, that, too.
Yeah. No, I think it's when there's a Brad Pitt's character that they're straight up I recall they had subtitles for his character mm-hmm. because it was deliberately supposed to be you could not understand a word he was saying.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we had the same concerns about Mario, and it was fine. As long as the character is well written, it's fine.
I would not be shocked if this movie plays into the fact that Link either doesn't really talk or doesn't talk at all, or talks very minimally. I don't think Link is going to be a chatterbox. This is probably the most New Jersey way I can compare this is I think there is a world where Link operates much like Silent Bob in Clerks and Dogma and Chasing Amy and stuff, where he's not going to talk that often, but when he does, it'll be impactful.
Yeah. I think you can get away with making Link talk, because I do think that in most Zelda games,
it's implied Link, he talks.
Well, and he's not quite as much of a blank slate as Mario is. He doesn't talk, but you very clearly understand his attitude and his character. Yeah. There's a lot more implied about how he thinks than there is in a Mario game. So I think you can get away with making him talk, and I think that's fine, especially since the odds of this being an existing Link within the lore are pretty slim. I'm guessing they're not going to make Ocarina of Time. I'm guessing they're going to make their own thing that might have elements of different things. But
Yoko Taro's Ocarina of Time.
This might be as close as you get.
Yeah.
No, honestly,
I assume you guys talked about it, but what do you think this plot is?
Well, so we talked a little bit about because I'm thinking, if I'm producing a Zelda movie right now, I'm going, all right, the Hyrule as presented in Breath of the Wild is the template, because that's the most popular Zelda.
I don't think Tingle will be in this nope. movie.
The Tingle Islands, maybe, but not Tingle.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you're doing that, there's not a story there. The most complex story in Breath of the Wild era Zelda has been Tears of the Kingdom, and that's just kind of knockoff Ocarina of Time. So, if you did want to do a story that was similar to a game, I do think Ocarina of Time or Skyward Sword are the two best stories, far as being able to tell them in a cinematic way. The weird thing is that I think that Breath of the Wild might have more cultural awareness than Ocarina of Time does, which hurts.
I mean, yeah.
But I think that's true.
I mean, I think Breath, whatever you do, the template is, it's Breath of the Wild. That world is what you base it off of.
Yeah.
And you have it, there is a Calamity Ganon or whatever, who knows?
And I don't, it's one of, we talked a little bit about, I don't know if it's, maybe not literally the plot, but I think you the Gerudo are represented very much in the way they are in that, as opposed to Ocarina of Time. In Breath of the Wild, the Gerudo are your friends. In Ocarina of Time, they're largely your enemies. The Sheikah are advanced technologically, as opposed to how they kind of weren't in Ocarina of Time and were just bodyguards. I think that you take kind of the characterization of the world, if not the exact plot. Please don't take the exact plot of Breath of the Wild. There isn't one. The movie I want them to make is, because I think you make Ganondorf the bad guy, because that's a much more, that's the most compelling villain they've had.
Yeah, you can't do, it's like you could take the maybe overall plot thread of Breath of the Wild, but it can't be Calamity Ganon. You need to have an enemy who can talk.
Yep. Yeah, you need Ganondorf. And on it, what I would do if I were making it is I'd do Ganondorf and Link essentially share an origin story canonically. They're both children of the Hylian Civil War
Ooh,
before Ocarina of Time. That's your movie right there. You have these two characters who have a similar origin, who were both like, Link was, you know, born, Ganondorf was presumably like a child during war.
Let's add on to that. Zelda also has they all grow up through the Civil War, and
you have this like forging event that then sends Ganondorf down a very different path. And like, I also feel like it's implied in Ocarina of Time that like the Gerudo probably got kind of fucked up by the Civil War because all of their civilization is in ruins right after it. So I'm guessing they didn't come out on top from that. Maybe Ganondorf's grumpy about that. Like, that's your movie. But we probably won't get that because Nintendo won't touch the Civil War. Please make a Hyrule Warriors game of that, Nintendo.
They'll mention the imprisoning war.
I'm like somehow at a third point in the timeline.
Yeah.
There's an unclear number of Ganondorfs being imprisoned.
I feel like pre Tears of the Kingdom, I'd be way more excited for this movie. Post Tears of the Kingdom, I'm like, no more story.
The frustrating part about Tears of the Kingdom is it was set up with such like the opening 20 minutes of that game. They're like, hey, remember all that lore you thought we didn't care about? We were paying attention, and you're like, oh my God, it's happening. And Ganondorf's like talking about Reiru, and you're like, holy shit. And like they're talking about the imprisoning war, and you're like, oh my God. And then they're like, but not that imprisoning war and not that Reiru. He's a goat now. Yeah. And the imprisoning war happened like fucking way before anything that could possibly be called the imprisoning war. And you're like, okay, never mind. We're back. Welcome back to Zelda. Oh man, the hype when Ganondorf said Reiru in that opening cutscene.
Yeah. I believe I texted you.
You were like,
said Reiru.
Yeah. And I was like, holy shit. Like, it's happening. No, it was not. It was not happening. Fuck you, Zelda.
Anyway, excited for the movie.
Me too.
Very. And I do. I mean, I just really excited to see this unfold. I do. I know what Derek Connolly is writing it. He did write some horrific things in the past. Worked with Colin Trevorrow a lot. He did that other episode 9 screenplay, the one that didn't get made. But it is the kind of thing, like, this is, once again, this is gonna probably sound like very depressing, but like, I'm interested in this the same way I was interested in the Snyder Cut.
I'm more interested in this.
yeah. But I mean, or at least it's just a similar way in that, like, the I don't know if this will be good, but I'm interested to see what they do.
Right. I want to see what happens. Yeah.
Really? Like, I won't lie. When they announced that, like, the Snyder is going to make a 4-hour movie because we're Warner Brothers and we don't know what to do during the pandemic, I was like, all right.
Yep.
I've got time. I will watch this entire thing. It wasn't that great.
I think I made it like 45 minutes into the Snyder Cut.
I was committed. I did take an intermission halfway through.
Oh, you gotta. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, honestly,
there are parts of that were, I mean, it was way better than the actual movie that they put out.
I don't know. I made it through the actual movie.
Well, yeah, because it was an hour and 15 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, it was. Like, that was great. Yeah. If you're going to give me a bad movie, at least make it short. Don't give me a bad long movie. As long as like this vaguely resembles Zelda and maybe the theme song plays at some point, if we could avoid any like Illumination style like 80s musical montages of like songs that don't fit the scene, then I'll be
swear to God, if they have like you know Need a Hero or whatever that song is that was in the Tetris movie and the Mario movie.
Yeah, the worst part is that one would kind of fit in Zelda.
You don't need to make it like the complete reverence of something like a Lord of the Rings, but just lean more in that direction than like goofy. Yeah.
Well, I think your audience is going to skew older. Like you're probably trying to hit a like teenage to PG-13. 20s audience. Yeah. You can take it a bit more seriously. I think honestly, this is once again, you know, coming from a obsessive Zelda lore nerd, but like I think the material is there to do it pretty straight if you want to. It just depends on, there's so much, you know, when you say I'm gonna make a Zelda movie, you go, cool, are you doing Twilight Princess or are you doing Wind Waker? what does that mean? There's a lot of range as far as tone goes for what a Zelda movie can be. So we'll see.
I'll also be fascinated because unlike the Mario movie, like this is going to be filmed somewhere. There's right. going to be way more potentials for leaks. Like the Mario Absolutely. Movie, they were able to like hide it for so long. They can't really do that with the yeah. Zelda movie unless they do it in the volume or whatever.
I was going to say that is kind of the advantage of if you shoot everything inside against volume or blue yeah. screen, then
you yeah, sure I remember can. When like Mandalorian would be shooting, they'd be like, we saw a man walk into like a yeah. corridor and he was wearing silver Mandalorian armor.
Yeah. Yeah. What color do you think his tunic's going to be, Neil?
Oh, green.
Okay. That was one of our questions that we brought up when we were talking about, because once again, Breath of the Wild is Zelda.
Yeah.
So what color is Link's tunic in the Zelda movie?
I don't know.
Doesn't that hurt a little bit?
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, obviously it should be green, but like, is that what most of the audience thinks of Zelda's, of Link's tunic as?
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks a lot, doesn't it?
He's going to wear the champion's tunic, isn't he?
Yep, he's going to be in blue.
Because I wouldn't be shocked if they do work in something with the you know, having a Goron buddy and a Rito buddy and everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I think working in the races that way.
If he doesn't romance a fish, we yep. walk out of the film.
Yeah.
That's actually consistent in both Breath of the Wild and Ocarina of Time. So we can all agree that Link must romance a fish.
Well, I mean, in Ocarina of Time, it was unrequited. Like, at least in Breath of the Wild, like, there were things happened.
He was into it. You could feel it.
Sidon is his son.
Yeah. Oh, Sidon is 100% his son. Yeah, that's borderline canon.
Yeah.
Especially since we've labeled Sidon as a descendant and not a sibling. he is Link's son.
Yep.
It's where he got that winning smile. Okay. Is that an episode?
I think that's an episode. Email us any more Zelda listener mail or anything else that we talked about or other things going on in the world of Nintendo. Email that over to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And talk to y'all next week when I will have played a lot of Super Mario RPG Remake. Very excited. Ooh. Also, I will have probably played the Bluey video game because I have children.
All right.
All right, bye.
Goodbye.